Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. Okay, so this evening is the full moon of February. Theravada tradition, Magha Puja, and that's a annual commemoration of an occasion in the Buddha's time when 1,250 arhants gathered, 1,250 enlightened beings gathered together at the bamboo grove, Rajagir. It was very early on in the dispensation of the Buddha. The Buddha gave the Owada Patimokkha, the chant that we, or the teaching that we chanted after the evening puja. As you can see by the chant, it was very brief. When you've got 1,250 arhants, you don't have to say a lot. And also you don't really need to be teaching and training. The Buddha didn't need to be expounding at any great length the teaching, because they understood it. But it's like a review of the fundamental principles of the training, and something for them all to delight in. You can imagine these great beings together, and the Buddha just really reiterating the principles of a holy life, of a life of awakening. So that these fundamental principles, I think, are really helpful to remember, to remind ourselves, because it's easy for us to, I'm certain, to forget how straightforward it actually is. Not doing of any evil, anything that's unwholesome, unskillful, to actually refrain from it. Which is, you think, well, it's kind of obvious, but that isn't how the world actually functions. Isn't how people live in the world. And then even when we come to train and to have aspiration for peace and freedom, they're just habits haunt us, we end up sort of, I can't believe I just said that. OK, can't believe I just did that. What happened there? So that sense of, just to be able to not do something that is unskillful, unwholesome, to undertake what is good, what is kusala, what's good, what is wholesome, and then to purify the mind, to really bring the mind to a place of purification, stability, clarity, true peace. And it says, this is the teaching of all Buddhas, and that I think the Buddha is placing himself in the lineage of awakened ones, that if one were awakened to true knowledge, this is what they teach. It's the fundamentals of an awakened being. And then, of course, in the details of the day-to-day living, that sense of establishing patience and being able to have a resilience to not follow things that are fraught with impatience or impulsiveness, just not injuring, not harming, fundamental restraint, and that devotion to the heightened mind. All these different teachings. It's like when the Ajahn Chah used to. I remember when I first went there, and he'd been saying it for years and years. To eat little, sleep little, talk little. That's what a practitioner does, and those simple things lay a foundation for a training. And we would like to somehow think in terms of some real snazzy philosophical clever thing, bit of knowledge or bit of information that is going to snap us into enlightenment, but that continuity of attending to those fundamentals of restraint and attentiveness, diligence. Those are really the foundations that are going to really change the mind stream. To be reflecting on those aspects of foundations, because it's these when those foundations are in place, then something very bright and beautiful can arise from that. So as we reflect on what is actually useful for training. Where is it going? Where is its direction? It's within those. There's that restraint from what is unwholesome, that commitment to developing what is good, developing the heightened mind, adijite, the heightened mind, the brightened mind, that sense of purifying the mind. Is accomplished through similarly a pretty straightforward means. The way that the mind becomes clear and steady relies on the ability of the mind to take an interest and to really look after the quality of knowing, quality of awareness, and in this sense of awareness being both a quality of attentiveness, but then also a reflective investigative awareness, a knowledge-seeking awareness. So that this quality of aware, I think one of the most beautiful phrases of that quality of awareness that is imbued with both, say, attention and discernment, is Upasika Gi Nanayon. The phrase that how Ajahn Jeff translates it, of an unentangled knowing. And that's a really beautiful way of expressing what is possible when the mind is not entangled in its biases, its attachments, its obsessions, whether it's an obsession with the external world or obsessions with itself, which we do very well, that unentangled knowing. So that being able to attend to how we can disentangle that knowing from the where the mind, the impulses of the mind, tend to go. And this is where it's both in terms of cultivation of mindfulness, but also the cultivation of wisdom. And it's in Ajahn Chah and the different forest teachers, they'll go back again and again to just using a simple phrase in the Thai language, which is used, but they're Pali words, satipanya. So it's just like that mindfulness and wisdom, or truth discerning awareness. So that cultivation of that truth discerning awareness, both lays a foundation for a grounded quality, an awareness that one carries into one's day-to-day life. But then it's also able to reflect, investigate on the nature of our experience. There's a discourse where the Buddha is... It's actually a very well-known discourse because it's the discourse the Buddha is teaching Moggallana, Mahamoggallana, before Moggallana became enlightened, so before Magga-puja, because Mahamoggallana was part of the assembly of the in this Magga-puja gathering. And but Mahamoggallana, who was the Buddha's foremost disciple in psychic powers, he was having difficulties with drowsiness, sleepiness in the meditation, and the Buddha, as in the sutta, the Buddha came to him gave him guidance on different techniques to use dealing with sleepiness, drowsiness, and that is pretty well known. But the discourse continues with the Buddha giving advice on just living the monk's life. And then Moggallana asks the Buddha what is kind of direct way of to knowing and liberation. And the Buddha says that when one knows that all things are not to be clung to, in the Pali. Holy, sambhe dhamma nalang apinivesaya. He said, when one knows that all things are not to be clung to, then one knows and understands all things. When one understands clearly all things, then one is able to see things in their true nature. When one sees things in their true nature, one can recognize how the one attends to the feelings as they arise, and seeing them in their impermanence. Seeing that all feelings, whether it's a pleasant feeling, a painful feeling, and neither painful nor pleasant feeling, this is impermanent. And I think it's important because when the Buddha's emphasizing the aspect of feeling, of course that's a major component in the construction of the mind, or the mind, mental states, how we, and of course all of the reactions, perceptions, movements of mind, how we conceive of the world around us is built through the mind. And and beginning from that building block of feeling and the way we react to feeling, The way we create out of feeling things that we like or dislike or are drawn to or repelled by, to be able to recognize, oh, this feeling is impermanent. This is changing. And in seeing that, that fundamental stimulus to the movement of mind, then we can not cling to it. Don't have to cling. We don't have to. We can relinquish and let go. And it's with the seeing the these feelings in ways that then turning to the aspects of dispassion, cessation, relinquishment in regard to feeling. So that bringing that perspective, that investigation to the experience of feeling, then that quality of seeing clearly all things, all dhammas, are not to be clung to. Because as soon as one clings, attaches, and develops a holding on to, then one is creating suffering in that very moment. One's building the causes of the it's like in the Buddha saying, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair. The different manifestations of dukkha, and the way that dukkha is established. Somebody once referred to that was that Soka Parideva Dukkha Dobanasu Payasa. Sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair. See, these are a few of my favorite things. it comes from this very simple foundation, and when it's not seen clear and we cling to it, then it brings us to a point of suffering, brings us back again and again. But that seeing clearly, directly knowing, directly understanding, all things are not to be clung to. Then that quality of knowing is an unentangled knowing, and that unentangled knowing is the vehicle for liberation, for not being agitated, not being entangled. So that in itself is the means, the vehicle for freedom. So these being able to, you know, to investigate our experience from that way, nurturing and caring for this quality of an unentangled knowing, by saying, okay, this, how to not cling. And this is where, again, there's the deceptively simple ways of viewing things that can, have the power to cut through our attachment, our clinging. But we need to cultivate it. We need to develop it. We need to lift it up and give it credence, give it power. I'm thinking of, say, like Ajahn Sumedho. If what you hear his talks for years and years, there's this phrase that he he keeps coming back to, it's like this. And I said, it's like this. And you see, Orion, it's, and you think, well, that's really, of course it's like this. How could it be like anything else? But it's by that sense, oh, it's like this. Whether it's a good feeling, oh, it's like this. This is what good feeling is like. This is what a positive thought is like. This is what it's like this. And we don't have to make anything more of it. Or this is a mood of aversion or ill will. It's like this. So rather than adding on layers of fear, guilt, or blame or whatever, what we extrapolate from that, it's like this. And in that it's like this, we can not cling to it. All things are not to be clung to, and we can put it down. We can relinquish it. We can let go. And it's that unentangled knowing that is the vehicle for relinquishment. Ajahn Buddhadasa used to use a similar phrase in Thai. You hear him say over and over again, "Oh, ben chen nan eng," and it's sort of, and it's sort of similar as it's like this. Oh, it's just that way, you know. It's just that way, ben chen nan eng. And you say, I've heard many talks of Ajahn Buddhadasa's and he's got a very deep voice, and he's a big man. He was a big man. It's sort of, I was sort of like, and it would be like, yeah, it's just that way, and it's just sort of reverberating. it's just that way. The world is exciting. It's just that way. The world is depressing. It's just that way. It's just, we're not making any more of it than what it is. And that experience, recognizing it, seeing clear, knowing clearly. Ajahn Chah used to always say, again, similar, this refrain would come over, over and over again, similar. Canon. It's only that. So, you feel happy? It's only that. You feel sad and depressed? It's only that. Feel peaceful and absolutely, brilliant? Canon. It's only that. Are you feeling just really agitated and scattered? It's only that. It's canon. We make a story out of it. We create a problem out of it. We exalt it. We get entangled in it. So that upasika ki, that call, that unentangled knowing is the function of all the different practices. Whether it's our precepts, our sense restraint, our patient endurance, our loving kindness, our practices of mindfulness and samadhi, or developing a stability of mind, the aspects of investigation and discernment. That whole range of practices that we do are there to support and to culminate in this quality of that knowing, that unentangled knowing, that simple recognition. It's like this. It's only this way. It's only that much. And that is that's the doorway to that letting go, that to not clinging. So this aspect of the practice is and it's easy to overlook how powerful it is, because we, you know, we're looking for experience. We're looking for, some special experience, some special insight, some special quality, because it gets us out of our kind of the tawdry ordinariness of our mind, but it's the ability, knowing clearly, and relinquishing, letting go, releasing. That's where the heart is really able to enter and abide in freedom. So that, you know, as we cultivate and practice, thinking of the like the Buddha's teachings on the four foundations of mindfulness, where the Buddha is really laying out the path. He's very unequivocal of this is the path to this is the way to the end of suffering. These four foundations of mindfulness, being the mindful of the body, feeling, of the mind, and of mental phenomena. These are the bases of our practice, of our training. But it's how it's also held, so that with the Buddha, clarifying or of course he gives all the different practices of where to pay attention, where to direct mindfulness, how to do it at the beginning, but then at the end, and the Buddha lays out the foundation of what is it that takes one to a place of insight, so that seeing the, I'm just using the body as the because that's the first one, but whether it's body, feeling, mind, mental phenomena, it's exactly the same, and also all through all the different various practices and ways of directing attention to those different categories, but seeing seeing the body in the body internally, seeing it body externally, seeing the body in the body both internally and externally. So it's just, it seems fairly obvious or clear. It's a way of, but what we experience outside is what's external. What's external is inside. They're both the same. It's all of the same quality. And then seeing the factors of arising, factors of ceasing, factors of arising and ceasing. So that seeing that process again of impermanence, change, coming into being, vanishing, moving, disintegration, and seeing them both at the same time. It's like that That phrase of in the the Anicca Vata Sankara chant on the impermanent or all formations of the nature to arise and cease. Upajitva nirujanti, disbanding as they arise, so that it's not just, okay, there, here it is, and this, the process is, it's taking place at the same time there. And to be able to reflect in that way. And then the aspect of maintaining the awareness of the body sufficient, just knowing that, oh, there is a body, and sufficient for knowledge and awareness. Just sort of that much, when we take mindfulness of the body, to have that that unentangled knowing, okay, this is a body, this is a feeling, this is the mind in the sense of, this is a mood of the mind, whether the mind is, and the Buddha goes through, there's the mind of, when there's a mind of greed, then one knows it's a mind of greed. There's no mind without greed, one knows it's a mind without greed. Mind with anger, knows it's with anger. Mind without anger, one knows it's without anger. And then there is mind, there is, to the extent of establishing knowledge and awareness, so that uncomplicated, unentangled knowing, without layering it with one's projections, one's fears, one's biases, one's attachments and clinging. It's just like this. That it's a it's not beyond the capability of any of us. And the Buddha gave his teachings in a way that allowed maybe your ordinary unenlightened run-of-the-mill person to transform to one who is entering the stream of Dhamma, entering the way of truth. And this is a transformation that we can all do. We can do this, but it's being able to approach things from a place of recognizing that all things are not to be clung to. And as soon as one sees that process of clinging, then alarm bells should be going off, and being able to come back to it. Because we very quickly justify it. We very quickly create a story that it's very compelling, but it's taking us down that rabbit hole of dukkha. So that too, the path of non-clinging is actually not very, compelling in the same way. But it's that straightforward ability to just abide in that unentangled knowing. So I'll offer that for reflection this evening.